This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Peter Medak is a director who has had the kind of life they make movies about. He grew up in Hungary, fled from the Nazis, and returned to face the repression of the communists. He was able to get out of Hungary in 1956 during a popular uprising which was quickly suppressed by Soviet tanks. Medak moved to England, where he got into the film industry and made such films as A Day in the Death of Joe Egg and The Ruling Class. In the 80s, he went to Hollywood and directed Zorro the Gay Blade and The Changeling. He returned to England for his last two films. The Craze was a complex character study based on the true story of Britain's most famous post-war gangsters. His new film, Let Him Have It, is also based on a true story in post-war England. In 1952, a 19-year-old reclusive, mentally handicapped man named Derek Bentley was talked into robbing a shop by 16-year-old Christopher Craig. When they were caught by the cops, Craig pulled out a gun and killed a policeman. Though Bentley didn't even have a gun, he was found guilty along with Craig. Craig was too young for the death penalty, but Bentley was given the death sentence and hanged. The British government recently reopened the case. I asked Peter Medak if this was due to his film.
Well, it's partly to do with the film. I mean, before the film opened in London, which was a couple of months ago, there was a screening at the House of Parliament for some members of the MPs and some of the kind of legal advisors and from the bar. And it had a tremendous impact on the audience, and a lot of them broke down and cried, and some of the wives had come, and a lot of them had forgotten or didn't know anything about it and realized that it was a ridiculous situation, and because everybody in England knew that that Derek was innocent. So this movement started at that point at the Parliament, and about 150 MPs started petitioning and reached to the Home Secretary, who at that point ordered a reinvestigation of the case.
Where does it stand now?
Well, it really stands that nobody heard anything ever since. The police is investigating the police at the moment, and it could go two ways. On one hand, it could lead to nothing. On the other hand, it may just eventually lead to his posthumous pardon. Which would be incredible, because everybody knows that he didn't do anything.
You see the story of Derek Bentley and Chris Craig as being about two teenagers in post-war England who are posing as gangsters, but who aren't really hardened criminals. Your previous film, The Craze, was about Britain's two top post-war gangsters. So you've made two related but different post-war mm-hmm. crime films
yeah.
set in England. I'm wondering about the impact crime films have had on you as a watcher and as a filmmaker.
But very little, in fact, because unfortunately, I never see enough movies. I love films very much, but I never see enough pictures. You know, in America, film directors grow up totally on every frame of every movie, because it's so much on television, it's being repeated. You know, I mean, they're all experts at it. I mean, I don't think there's a frame of an old movie which Spielberg hasn't seen or Marty Scorsese hasn't seen, you know, and I'm very envious of that, but I don't really have the time or the patience or the opportunity to do that. So I haven't grown up with that, and I've seen really very few of the, I mean, I love the Humphrey Bogart movies, and of course I have seen White Heat, but I'm not kind of obsessed or educated on all those frames of the old movies, so it didn't have an effect of it on me. However, it had, something indirectly had an effect on me, is because when I was in Hungary and when I was a small child, I couldn't go to school because of my parent, my father, who was imprisoned by the Russians and this and that, and the usual story. And I used to hang out outside the American embassy, in the British embassy, because I had nothing to do all day long. And I pretended to be an American spy, you know. And I really, much more of those things get into the film indirectly.
So let me ask you, when you were posing as an American spy,
yes.
What would you do to get the right look?
I just had this raincoat, which my aunt sent from England. And I turned the collar up, and I was just kind of hanging about looking at the photographs of Harry Truman opening up bridges. I mean, what they did in the American embassy in Hungary at the time, because it was really totally, I don't think people have the conception what it was like to be behind the Iron Curtain. And this is, I'm talking about 1950, 1948 to about 1955. You were totally closed off from the world. And the only way you could see what the West was like is if you dared to go in front of the embassy and look through the window. And they had like shop windows and a book turning with photographs of what was going on in America, about Marilyn Monroe and Harry Truman and Dwight Eisenhower and all that. And you just... they used to sell corn on the cob in the street corners here, the way they sell pretzels. And I was just chewing and I was saying, oh, well, I've got the upper hand because they don't know that I'm really working for the Americans. And I used to watch them, the American jeeps come from the airport and load and unload the empty bottles of the Coke with the full bottle of Coke going into the embassy because you couldn't buy Coca-Cola. But the image of the West for me was the Coke bottle, and I didn't really have it until I escaped out of Hungary. And it's a long story, but I mean, two of my friends, I left with three friends, and we wandered into this Austrian village, and both of my friends fell asleep in the stables, and I wandered down the village street, and there was this Coke machine at this gas station. So I rushed back and I woke both of my friends up and I said, guess what, there's this Coke machine, we can have our first Coke. And we staggered down the street and whatever little money we had, which we've given at the border when we got out, we put into this machine and nothing came out. And we were just standing there, these three little kids in the wind blowing in front of the image of the West, and it was broken.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, like so many of us have experienced not getting anything when you put in your quarter or your 50 cents or whatever now, but it never has had that kind of symbolic importance that it must have had to you.
Yeah, but and also, you know, watching it outside the embassy, always the empty bottles of Cokes coming out and the full crates going in and not be able to taste it.
Yeah, yeah. If you're just joining us, my guest is Peter Medak, and his new movie is Let Him Have It. He also directed The Craze and The Ruling Class. What was your father imprisoned for?
Well, tragically, we tried to escape in 1948, and we left on the wrong weekend, and we never got out. And the people who were going to smuggle us out of the country were caught a couple of weeks later, and all the names who they were going to get out were spilled. And then because of that, he was arrested. And once he was arrested, then they created a kind of a fake trial, and they proved that he was an American spy, which he, of course, wasn't. And it's because of that I was supposedly a son of a capitalist. I wasn't fit to be educated, so I didn't go to school since I was 13.
You weren't permitted to go to school because of that?
No, which in a way I was very delighted about. But I mean, I was very envious of all my friends who went to college and universities, but I never had the chance to do that.
So you managed to escape from Hungary in, I think it was 1956?
56, yeah.
You went straight to England?
Yes, I did. I mean, first I went to Austria for a couple of weeks. And eventually, it was quite incredible because the entire world was so openly welcoming all the refugees, and about 250,000 people got out in a matter of 2 weeks, and they all poured into Vienna. And all you had to basically do is go to an embassy of a country where you wanted to go register and be registered and examined, and eventually you got your passage and a ticket and money, and you could begin a life. So I always wanted to go to England, and that's where I went.
How did you start making movies? How did you start training for it?
Well, I fortunately, through my aunt, who was a very famous opera singer, who was incredibly well connected, I was introduced to an American gentleman who was, his name was C.J. Latta, and he ran Warner Brothers in England. And I went to see him, and he said, look, don't worry, you know, give me a couple of weeks and I'll find you some position. And he got me my first job as a trainee. And that's how I really started.
So here you were in this pretty awkward position. You didn't really know English very well. You hadn't grown up watching a lot of movies.
No.
Because there weren't a lot of movies in Hungary to be watched. And here you were trying to make movies, so you were pretty handicapped. It must have been hard to get started.
Well, the only thing is that I dreamt about making movies, though, since I was 8 years old. And it really came that this aunt of mine, the opera singer aunt, gave me a present for my 8th birthday, or 10th birthday, I'm not quite sure which one, which was a 35mm hand crank projector and a piece of film. And I then started projecting this piece of film for everybody, days on end. And it really started my obsession. But I think what drove me to making movies was my loneliness in my own little life, of being isolated from my friends, of not being allowed to go to school, you know. So I had really spent my time dreaming, looking out the window and seeing things in the sky, and pretending, you know, this whole thing about pretending an American spy, of pretending to be something you're not, and play acting and trying to play out games.
If you'll let me make the connection to your new movie, To Let Him Have It, Derek Bentley, the teenager who was mentally handicapped and who did not pull the trigger but who was found guilty anyways, he was epileptic. And he spent years and years in his room. And you depict him as somebody who is so tragically uncomfortable in the world. And I would guess you really relate to the way that you've depicted him in the movie.
Yeah, I do. I respond and I relate to tragedies, which doesn't mean that that's all I want to do, because there's nothing more I would love to do is an insane comedy, which is about life. But I think one's personal life, and I had so many terrible things happen in my early life. I mean, being a Jewish boy and going through the whole war and surviving that, and watching life begin after a world war, and then life beginning again, then the Russians coming in, and this whole insanity about communism and the repression of it, and not being allowed to go to school, then escaping out into the free world, then starting a life on your own. And you know what I mean? I spent an awful lot of time on my own. And there's this desperate need there's tremendous emotions inside me. And I'm very emotional, and being Hungarian, rather melancholic and all that. But there's this desperate need to get that out. And when I come across stories like the Derek Bentley story, it just coincides with one's own life, in a way, indirectly.
If you're just joining us, my guest is film director Peter Medak. His new movie is called Let Him Have It. He also directed The Craze and The Ruling Class. We're going to take a short break, and then we'll talk some more. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guest is film director Peter Medak, and his films include the new movie Let Him Have It and The Craze. There was a period in your career early on when you worked in American television. I guess this must have been the late 50s or early 60s, because I know you worked on such programs as Alfred Hitchcock Presents and The Virginian.
Yes.
I'm wondering what it was like for you as this Hungarian emigre who didn't grow up watching Westerns to suddenly be making one of these like TV genre series like The Virginian.
It was wonderful. I mean, what happened actually, that I was an assistant director in England, and the last movie I worked on was a film called VIPs with Elizabeth Taylor and Richard Burton. And while I was on that film, I was offered this wonderful chance to sign a contract with Universal Studios, which was called then Review Productions, to come out for a few weeks to observe American television the way they're doing it, and then go back to England and work for them. And when I arrived at the studio, Sidney Sheinberg was a lawyer at the time, and I was his responsibility. And they discovered that they wanted someone English, and I was the one who turned up. And at that time, I was still stateless; I didn't have a British passport. And they expected someone with a bowler hat and an umbrella to turn up. And then here I came, and the project which they brought me out on fell through immediately. And I said to Sid, you know, well, I mean, before you send me back, I can't go back to England, because everybody sent me off with this big farewell that the kid got his break. And I was in Hollywood after having come out of Hungary 7 years later. It was 1963. And I said, please, you know, I can't go back. And so just put me together with someone who can find out if I can direct or not. And then there was this period of time before they got my green card. Why I couldn't do anything else except observe. So I spent some time with Alfred Hitchcock, who was doing Marnie at the time. And that's when I first met Sean Connery. And then I spent time on Virginians and Wagon Train. I started to do second units and bits and pieces. And it was incredible because I was wandering under the back lot of the studio and had access to the library, and I could find in the same location silent movie day clips of what was shot in the studio. And it was just magical.
Your two recent movies, The Craze and Let 'Em Have It, are both in a way about people coming of age after the war in England. Now, you didn't live in England after the war. You were still living in Hungary. But can you just give me a little bit of a sense of what it was like for you right after the war? Because I would guess from these films that it had a big impact on you.
Yes, it was very, well, traumatic, but wonderful as well, because, you know, having escaped from Budapest in 1944, and then we hid next to the Gestapo in the country, in a little village where the village changed hands between the Germans and the Russians 3 or 4 times, and we had to pretend to be Catholics, and my name was changed from Peter to something else, and I could never understand it. Why did I have to go to... And we weren't religious whatsoever, but why did I have to go to church every Sunday? And then when the war ended, of going back to Budapest... There's an incredible story. The day when we escaped out of Budapest in 1944, we were sitting down for lunch, my brother, me, and my mother and my father, and the maid was serving soup. And she went back to the kitchen, and she rushed in and said to my father that all the people from the opposite building are being taken away by the Hungarian SS. And my father rushed out, and he came back, and he said, "We got to leave right now." And we got up from the table with the 4 soup plates there, rushed down from this 4th floor, this wonderful kind of marble building, and got to the front door when a man was being chased by an SS guy and there was gunshots. And my father said, "Look, whatever you do, don't turn around." And we walked out to the street and walked past the dead body of this person who they just shot a second ago. And by some miracle, we got away before the SS surrounded our building and escaped out of Budapest. Then we hid, as I said, in the country for a year. And when the war was over, we came back to Budapest, and on a train, like all those pictures of the Russian revolutions when millions of people are on the top of the train. But my father put 2 wooden planks between the bumpers of 2 carts, and that's where we were sitting. And you could see the ground passing, and I still see it. And we finally got back to the apartment in Budapest. We went up, and the wall was completely blown in, and you could see out into the kitchen, to the building where the Jews were taken away just before we escaped. And I was standing in the dining room with all the rubble on the floor. And to my amazement, there was the dining table with the 4 soup plates on it, with the dry soup still in it, a year later. And here I was a little kid, just couldn't understand it, that all these terrible things happened in the world and the world had turned upside down, and here I was in this room where time has stood still. And I hope one day I can really make a movie about it which would use up all these images, because there are so many of them like that. But I will never forget those dried soup plates.
Wow, yeah. You know, I'm wondering, when you're meeting with people in Los Angeles about movies, if you ever think, you know, gosh, this is trivial.
Yeah, I do.
The things that they want and, you know, the need for success and all of that. It just seems like you've been through a whole lot, and you want to make movies that have a lot of depth to it, and it certainly is difficult to do that now.
It's very difficult. And I say it to myself every day. I don't know what I'm doing there. And I am there, and we have a lovely house, and we live there, and all my kids live there, and that's why I'm there. And I really do believe that I can make, and I will be able to make, those kind of meaningful, sensitive films in America as well, because I really want to do my next movie in America, having done The Craze and Let Him Have It. And I think it is possible, but I don't think... I think I desperately need New Line, Miramax, you know, the independent companies who respond to the stories, you know, I want to make. You know, who you can't quite walk into Walt Disney Studios and tell them that story about the soup plates and saying, look, I really would love to make a movie about that, because they think I'm crazy. But it's not beyond the expectations that other independent sources would accept it, you know, because that's the answer. I mean, that's the kind of movies I would love to see. I mean, that's why when Louis Malle makes a movie in France, you know, we all flock to see it, because it touches you, because it talks about his life.
I really became familiar with your work through your last two movies. I mean, I'd seen The Ruling Class, but I saw that a long time ago. But I was so struck by your last two films, by The Craze and Let Him Have It. And I'm wondering if you think of yourself as being in a different part of your career artistically.
Yes. No, I think I am, because after Ruling Class, I've gone through a lot of personal problems. My first wife committed suicide, and it gave me a terrible shock, you know, and it takes many years to get over that, if one ever gets over it. And you lose your judgment, you get affected by other people or what film studios want and this and that, and you lose yourself. And I felt that I lost myself, really. And really, at the 11th hour, when it was nearly too late, I realized that I have to go back to my roots, which is in England, and go back to square one and do what I always been able to do, which were small, very intimate stories. And that was very important to me, and I feel that I lost myself, that I found myself completely and totally.
Well, I look forward to seeing your forthcoming films.
Good.
And I thank you so much for talking with us.
Okay, my pleasure.
My guest has been film director Peter Medak. His new movie is called Let Him Have It. And The Craze, by the way, if you'd like to see it, is out on video. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.